Welcome to the Broadcast Sport Podcast. I'm senior reporter Max Miller, and for this episode, I'm speaking to Olympic Broadcasting Services CEO Yanis Exarchos about how the host broadcaster is promoting women's sports, bringing in broadcast innovations such as virtual OB vans and more for the Paris 2024 Games.
Hi, my name is Yanis Exarchos. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Olympic Broadcasting Services, which is the host broadcaster for the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games. And I'm also Executive Director of Olympic Channel Services, the digital content and technology arm of the International Olympic Committee.
Obviously, we're not very far away from Paris 2024 now. So at what stage are you in the preparations? How's it going? How's it looking ahead of the big event?
We're very close to the mark of 100 days to the Games. And actually, for us in broadcasting, the Games, the operations of the Games have practically started, because as of the beginning of this year, we have a team of close to 100 people in Paris who are already preparing the spaces. They're building out the spaces for what is going to be the International Broadcast Center in Paris. It's at Le Bourget, at this big exhibition hall where usually the bigger shows take place, and we will transform this place into the largest media hub in the world. It will be the basis of operations of all media rights holders and of OBS during the Games. It's the place where we will aggregate all the signals, all the coverage from the Games, and therefore we will distribute to all the world, to the whole world. Broadcasters, we're setting up studios for them. So we are very, very, very busy and very active currently. And we are warming up to what I think are going to be historical Games, game-changing Games, if I'm allowed to say so. I think that the Games of Paris are going to set a new paradigm in many respects. They are the first Games that are organized under what the IOC calls the new norm, which is a new, more efficient and more sustainable way of organizing the Games. Also, they are Games that I think, as the first Games after the pandemic, their symbolism cannot be missed, that it's coming together of the whole world, coming together also in a physical sense to celebrate the unity of the world, which I think also acquires and a very, very special meaning, especially during our times where we see increased division in the world and increased challenges in the world. And I don't think that the world has needed more the Olympic ideals of unity and peace more than it does now, at least not for the last 30 years or so. Additionally, very historical Games, because they will be the first Games with entirely equal participation on men and women athletes in the Games, which is, I believe, a huge achievement. There isn't any other major sporting event where you have this. And I think this goes a long way into telling the story and highlighting the importance and the special nature, the special values nature that the Olympics bring to the world.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioning that the gender neutrality that's coming this year, what's been done from your end, I guess, to make sure that obviously on the field is completely gender neutral for 2024, but making sure that's clear in the broadcasts and making sure the visibility is the same.
The issue of gender equality is, I think, not just important, it is fundamental. And as I said before, the IOC and the Olympic Games have come a long way. We need to imagine that when the Games took place for the first time in Paris in the 1900, there were only 22 women participants. In Paris 2024, there are going to be 5,250, exactly the same number as men participants. Even as recently as the Games of Los Angeles back in 1984, we need to realize that women represented less than 25%, less than a quarter of the total amount of athletes. So in Tokyo, we were very close, but in Paris, it's going to be really 50-50. That's one parameter of this of the work on the recognition of equality between men and women. The second very, very important part is all the work that has been done by the IOC, by the organizers, by OBS, even by our rights-holding broadcasters, into having a more balanced program. That means ensuring that women's competition becomes as prominent as men's competition. In the past, only a few games ago, just to give you an example, on the very last day of the games, which is a very festive day, you had traditionally, out of the 12, 14 hours of competition, probably 10 or 12 hours were devoted to men's finals and only to women's finals. So it was all around the end of the games around men's finals. In Paris, actually, it's going to be more women competition on the last day than men's. And this is a work that has gone across the whole program and the whole schedule, how to ensure that the prominence of women's competition is as important and as highlighted as that of men. It has taken a lot of work, a lot of logistics, a lot of organization, discussions with international federations, but also discussions with our media rights holders, who I must say have embraced the idea. They also see the value and the particular character of the games into bringing women and women audiences massively into the games. It's the only major sporting event where viewership is almost equally divided between men and women. Usually there's still a very heavy balance in sports events, even major sports events, for male audiences. Not the case in the Olympic Games. So in terms of the pure sporting content of the sporting event itself, I think that Paris will be a big celebration of equality. However, in our world, and I think I have become also a little bit tiring in repeating that, I don't think that we can still be very happy with the state of sports media and especially sports broadcasting. Because still, in our area, you have a very high disparity between the number of professionals who are male and female. There are many justifications for that, many historical reasons, but I think if we want to move on, we need to look beyond these reasons and really have objectives and targets to address the situation. Ourselves in OBS, we have been doing this effort for a number of years now. OBS, when it started, was also a company that reflected the reality of the sports broadcasting industry. So it was we have a big disparity between the number of men and women professionals in our organization. Currently, we are at 47-53, so the difference percent. So the difference is very, very small, and I'm optimistic that within probably the next 2 years, this will become a 50-50. This is one part. The second is, of course, having more women in more senior positions, which is also happening in organizations. We have more and more in senior positions within OBS. The other element is, what do we do during games time, where we depend a lot on what is available in the industry, and the industry, as I said, continues being quite biased. So we will have more than 8,000 professionals from more than 90 countries working for us. And we have made a very, very conscious effort of significantly increasing the amount of women and promoting and demanding from our providers and vendors to make sure that they exhaust every possibility of keeping this balance right. It is also important that in key positions of responsibility, we will have a pretty high women participation. Just to give you an example, we have in the games in every venue, the master of the venue from a broadcast point of view is our broadcast venue manager. He has all the different departments under her control. In Paris, 2/3 of the broadcast venue managers are going to be women. The same will be the case in our broadcast operations center, which is our war room, so to speak, from the IBC, where we manage all the games, all the incidents, everything that happens there. And we have the representation of all departments and functions within OBS. There as well in Paris, 2/3 of the team are going to be women. In addition to that, we have made specific efforts in some areas which traditionally suffered, like the origination of images. We know that there is a problem in the market with not sufficient number of women camera operators. So you have some great women who are photography directors in cinema and so on. So we have been making a number of training courses, one of them a few months ago in Paris, specifically trying to bring more women into working with cameras. And the result of that effort was very, very successful. So we will use many more in the Games of Paris. This program was called Framing the Future. And we trained more than 70 camera operators in Paris last November. The other area where traditionally, which is very important because it goes to the reflection of the sport and the way sport are perceived by people, has to do with commentators. So for the commentary that OBS is providing to media rights holders, traditionally the vast majority were, of course, men. There, it's an area where we also worked in a focused way. We trained a lot of younger women commentators, some of them actually Olympic athletes, Olympians, who won finishing their athletic career to transition into media. And we have trained a lot of them, and we will be using a lot of them. The result is that in Paris, 38% of the commentators that we will use will be women. We're not yet 50%. But I hope that in the next games, probably we'll get there. But just to give you an idea, this is already an 8% increase from Tokyo within these 4 years. So you understand what a big difference there was. Final element, and I think very, very important, has to do with the portrayal of women into sports coverage. I often repeat that I really get irritated many times, even in major sporting events, when I recognize that the coverage still carries some stereotypes. You see, not necessarily out of bad will, but out of a subconscious bias or out of the way people are used to be doing things, you know, some camera operators to be framing men and women in a different way, in a more stereotypical way. Portraying women athletes more as, you know, objects of attraction. They're not there because they're attractive or not attractive. They're there because they are elite athletes. They're the best athletes in the world. Even reactions, selection of reactions from the audience. Sometimes they do repeat and they do propagate these stereotypes around the role of genders. So what we have done in the IOC is we have developed a very detailed list of portrayal guidelines that we use ourselves as a Bible for our own producers, our own directors, our own teams. Also, these guidelines, the new version of them will be published in a month from now. We will distribute also to our media rights holders with a strong encouragement for those of them who want to follow them. They're quite detailed and they really provide solutions and ask questions about how we cover, what is the narrative and so on. And we believe they can go a long way into ensuring that several stereotypes that still exist in the way we cover sports can really be reduced and removed, especially in an event with such a huge impact in the world as the Olympic Games. 2 weeks ago, we had a big meeting with our broadcasters in Cortina for the 2026 Games, for the Winter Games. And we had a very good and I think very honest discussion with our broadcasters. We explained to them how important this area it is for us. We encourage them to use our guidelines, but also we ask them for fresh ideas around achieving gender equality, because some of them are doing great work. Some of them are very advanced organizations on the front. So we wanted very much this information to be shared within this Olympic broadcast community. And I must say that the reaction was very, very positive. I know that we're days before the games, practically from a broadcast point of view, but it's important that no broadcaster said, you know, well, this is good, but it's something for the future. Everybody was prepared to really rethink, even vis-a-vis Paris, how we do things and how we can do things better. So for me, it's one of the major challenges, and hopefully Paris will be a milestone also on that front. The situation will not be perfect. We still have a long way to go in sports media, but I believe the Olympics have the power to shake the world a little bit on that front.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds all-encompassing across behind and in front of the camera. And so those conversations with broadcasters, so that's in Europe, it would be Warner Brothers Discovery, the EBU members. How do you approach working with them and making sure that it's kind of joined up thinking across the board?
Listen, the good thing with the partners in the Olympic Games is, first of all, that most of them are long-term partners with the Olympics. Even though, for example, in Europe, for a couple of games, the members of the European Broadcasting Union, which are the public service broadcasters of Europe, were not direct rights holders, most of them ended up carrying the games as sub-licensees of Discovery Eurosport. And that goes a long way into showing the deeper commitment that many of these broadcasters have to the Olympics and what they represent. I believe that most broadcasters are associated with the Olympic Games, not just for the sheer commercial value of the Games themselves, but also in what the Games represent for their society. So they feel that it's a little bit part of a wider narrative. It goes beyond sports. There are many countries where carrying the Olympic Games is a legally established obligation of broadcasters, precisely because these countries recognize the importance and the value of the Olympic Games. They don't do that for every sporting event, but they single out the Olympic Games. That means also that these organizations are quite sophisticated in the area of looking into incorporating values in what they do. Also, I think it's important to recognize that we live in rapidly changing times on that front. I don't think any serious media entity in today's world can really operate as a purely commercial entity, disregarding all the value components. I believe that what's going on today in the world and the expectations from the wider audience are so far more complex. It's not just enough for people to say, this coverage is cool. They need also to trust the media entity and the broadcaster that they are doing something for public good, that they are doing it without abusing the people who work, that they are doing that while they make an effort for equality, for inclusion. So I believe that these conversations are not as difficult as one would expect. In some cases, I believe that we simply offer, ready-made solutions of elements that we have thought through very, very well for them to adopt. And that was the feeling that I got, that some of them were thankful because in such a consistent and organized way, we showed them some ways how to do things. Also, we need to understand that we have so many top-level professionals working in the Olympics. You will have 8,000 people working for us. You will have a total of probably more than 21,000 broadcasters working in Paris. So they represent the elite of the broadcast world. And if themselves they become the carriers of these ideals, then really the industry can change. It's not two football matches. We will be producing 11,000 hours of content that will be experienced by half the Earth's population.
Yes, it's, a crazy amount of content, really. And you mentioned there's a lot of internal initiatives with camera operators, with the venue managers. I guess, does that help with making sure that the coverage is more neutral? And also, are you hoping that that will also help the wider industry? These people can then move on into other jobs in other companies and so on.
Yes, exactly. I believe also the most important thing is at the end of the day, first of all, by empowering not just women, because as I said, we try our organization, the way we cover the Olympics, to reflect inside out an Olympic vision on broadcasting. I said before that we will have more than 8,000 people working for us, 8,000 professionals. They come from 90 countries. Okay, what this means in terms of complexity of organizing, you can only imagine. Hiring people from all over the world, making sure that we respect all the different, considerations, social security, cultural things, the food and so on. You understand how complex it is, but we believe that this provides to our operation, to our coverage, this unique worldwide, global, universal perspective that we want from the Olympic Games. Otherwise, we could be doing it, with top professionals from five countries and it is what it is. This is not what we want to do. Also, one other important part of what we do and that I feel is an important legacy of Olympic broadcasting is the training program that we organize in every host city. In Paris, we will be training more than 1,600 young students from universities studying areas which are relevant to what we do, whether it is sports or it is journalism or digital media or in engineering and so on. From those, we will select the majority of them, and they will be working with us during the games in junior professional positions. They will not be volunteers. They will work in junior paid professional positions. They will be trained by some of the best experts in the world in sports broadcasting, and they will be working during the games next to some of the world's best broadcasters. They will be starting their professional careers by working in the largest audiovisual production in the world. And that usually leaves a lasting legacy in the host country. It becomes the core of a new generation of professionals who start actually their careers by something which is immersed in the Olympic ideals. Another interesting thing, in Paris, 57% of the students participating in the program are women. So already you can see that the next generation, maybe things will hopefully be very, very, very different to what they were in my generation and beyond. And that is another important legacy. So I believe that it's a combination of all these elements that will really result in creating a different sense and a different approach to gender equality, and in general, I would say, to inclusivity in terms of cultural origin, country of origin, and so on in our coverage. And we've seen that somehow this is always reflected, and this always influences the people in a big way.
Is this something which, compared to the last summer games in Tokyo, where COVID restrictions obviously will have had a massive effect, are you more able to kind of bring training schemes in? And also, how does it affect it with having crowds there? I'm guessing it's a whole different ball game in that situation.
The last games, both in Tokyo and in Beijing, I think were games which were milestones in terms of the achievement. The fact that despite what many people believed, and probably it was a justified belief that it would be impossible to do Olympic Games during the pandemic, we, and I mean the whole Olympic world, the whole Olympic movement, we managed to deliver these Olympic Games. And that was a huge commitment, first of all, to the athletes, because we need to understand that for the vast majority of athletes, they will only have the opportunity to participate in one Olympic Games because of the nature of the Games happening every 4 years. So we didn't want to have a generation that missed the Games for this reason. It happened during the Second World War. We didn't want it to be the same. So we all felt we had to deliver. Of course, we were lucky because we had two hosts, Japan and China, that you couldn't have hoped for better. I mean, their resilience, their capacity to deliver under these difficult circumstances was extraordinary. But also the resilience of the whole movement, the athletes themselves, to go to the Olympics with all the difficulties of training, ourselves putting together, you know, a production under these conditions, you know, with all the quarantines and all the protective measures and so on. Of course, there were both games where we missed one fundamental element, which was the physical presence of the spectators, the viewers. That for me makes, you know, almost one half of the atmosphere. And that is the big thing that we expect in Paris. You expect these games to be a huge celebration, as we want the games to be. And you can think of very few places in the world where this can happen in a better way. So I think that people will experience the games as being quite different in their atmosphere. I think that the games of Paris hopefully will be games of real big celebration without us being guarded. I think there will be games of human liberation, because after all these years of the measures and the physical distancing, I think we all crave for physical contact. There's a reason why these last two summers have been huge summers in terms of big concerts and so on. We have had digital concerts throughout the pandemic, but what people crave for is to go back there, you know, sweat in concerts, go in big sporting events. And this, I think, will manifest itself in a big way in Paris. That being said, also the period of the pandemic, and especially the Games of Tokyo and Beijing, have left with us as well a very positive legacy, which is the extremely rapid acceleration of digital workflows. The capacity to do things. I remember when we started planning, for example, for what proved to be one of the most successful elements of the coverage in Tokyo was the introduction of what we call the athletes' moon, the capacity of the athletes to talk remotely to their friends and families around the world. It was a very complex thing to pull through from an organizational and technological point of view, and we did it within 3 months, because this is when we knew that there would eventually be no spectators. And we tried to think, how can we help the athletes really have a sense of communication with when an athlete finishes their effort, the first thing that they do is the turn to the stands, and they're looking for their beloved faces. They're looking for the face of their parents, their friends, their partners, and so on. It's human nature. It's instinctive. And they were deprived of that. How can we substitute that? So we did it in a digital way. The interesting thing is that this was so successful that everybody, starting with the athletes, want us to do it again in Paris, where they will have the capacity to have everybody there, but still this capacity to get out, to reach out to the other parts of the world. So we will also have this happening in Paris. So, you know, the period of the pandemic was very different, and the games of the pandemic were very different. I think the games that we have ahead of us will be games of full unalloyed celebration, but also some elements that we gained from the pandemic around digital acceleration, doing more things remotely, being more efficient in the way we do things, are a good lasting legacy that will remain.
And those digital kind of legacies, I guess, from those games, is that also something which helps with sustainability? Because I'm assuming there's less on site than there would be otherwise.
Absolutely. And on that front, you know, ourselves, to be honest with you, we started all our efforts around sustainability much, much earlier. The starting point has been at the end of the Beijing Games back in 2008, where the games had already become very, very big, you know, participation of many broadcasters, many sports, complex installations, and so on. And we felt that we need to start thinking about how we can do things in a more efficient way, because this would be unsustainable. So since that time, starting a little bit in the Games of London, but consistently after that, we have been putting together a number, a very long list of initiatives that would enable essentially us and the broadcasters to do more with less. Because the demand is not that we do the same. At the time, we were producing close to 4,000 hours of broadcast. In Paris, we will produce 11,000 hours. It's because of the increase of the games, of the scope of the games, but also the proliferation of digital media. It's no longer that we do only production for linear television. We do tons of things for digital, for social media, and so on. So the demands are much more, but we cannot keep on increasing the footprint. So by adopting a number of major, primarily technological innovations, and I would say that one of the most important has been the very aggressive introduction that we have done of cloud technologies. When we started it after Pyeongchang, many people in broadcasting felt that this may not work. It's probably too difficult for broadcast productions and for the volume of data and product coverage and high resolution coverage to work on the cloud. However, we worked with our partners, with Alibaba. We created essentially a broadcast platform, cloud-based, which is called OBS Cloud, which was tailor-made for the users in the Olympic Games. And the result is that broadcasters became increasingly massive adopters of that. In Paris, one-third of the international transmission of the signals that we will do to broadcasters will be done over the cloud, live. You know, when we started, we're not even sure whether that would be for live. We thought that it would be for pre-recorded, for storing, for library, for editing, and so on. Now we're talking live 4K. And this is the way most many broadcasters will be using it. What is the outcome? The outcome has been a reduction of the space that we use in the International Broadcast Center. It's significantly smaller than what it was in Tokyo. Tokyo was smaller than what it was in Rio, even though we have five sports more. And where you see also a radical reduction is in the area of power consumption, where compared to Rio, let's say, the power consumption for us in the games of Tokyo is going to be close to 50% less in the IBC and 70% less in the venues. By doing all these things and enabling broadcasters to do things remotely, do on a cloud-based basis, and so on. So it's a massive, massive impact for the sustainability of the games, huge savings for the organizers, of course, in terms of spaces, facilities, and so on. But I think ultimately for the broadcasters as well.
And I feel like there's, it's just a massive event, that there's an endless amount of initiatives going on. We could go on forever, but I'm aware we're starting to run out of time.
We have currently another very another crazy initiative that we started testing in Beijing, which we called virtual lobby van. So we have started thinking, how can we, since we transitioned most of the broadcast infrastructure into IP technologies, so from traditional broadcast technologies into IP technologies, in theory, you can imagine things working a little bit like in the IP world, you know, servers, software, and optics, the cameras. This is the simple theory. In practice, things are far more complicated, but the idea is, how can we become less dependent on moving around the world all these huge trucks, you know, the outside broadcast vans that we need to use, which are cumbersome, which are unsustainable, and so on. So we developed, in collaboration with our partners of Intel, which is one of the world leaders in terms of computational capacity, this concept of a virtualized OBVAN, meaning using a number of very powerful servers and software to replicate the functions of a production gallery in virtual mode. So you have some elements in the venue, but you may have many other things happening beyond the venue, in the IBC, or even remotely in different countries. So we tested that in Beijing. We tested it again in the games in Gangwon, the youth games. And in Paris, we will actually be doing the coverage of three sports using this solution. And we believe this can be a watershed for the whole industry. I believe that it can really show a new way of doing outside broadcast in the future, in general, in sports broadcasting.
Seems like the way things are going, I think, towards the cloud and remote. And as a last question, what are you most excited about for this summer across the Olympics, Paralympics, or most nervous about making sure it all goes smoothly? which is yours?
Listen, I cannot hide the fact that one of the most exciting elements is the opening ceremony in Paris. It's quite unique. It's a visionary concept, not doing it in a stadium, but doing it in the heart of one of the world's most iconic and photogenic cities is incredible, allowing, you know, 300,000 people to be part of that, allowing all the athletes of the world to navigate through this beautiful river and get inspired by all the elements of the cultural legacy, not just of France. I think they represent, you know, the cultural legacy of the world, especially in the current circumstance of the world, where we see again divisions, wars, enmity, racism, and so on. I think there cannot be a more powerful message of unity than what this opening ceremony will bring. Is it a complex and challenging project? Absolutely. The most complex and challenging we have ever faced, or any organizing committee. But if I can speak as a producer, you know, it's the kind of things that you really live your professional life to have the opportunity to be part of it. I know that there are many nights when I wake up at night and think otherwise. but let's say that it's an inspirational project. It's by far the largest production we have ever done. I guess it's probably, if not the largest and most complex, probably one of the most large and complex broadcast live coverages ever. We'll be using more than 100 cameras. We have custom-built 4 boats made in a very special way to be able to follow that. 3 helicopters, 8 drones, a very complex setup in terms of transmission of signals, RF and otherwise. It is very complicated, but I think it's one of the most inspirational things. And really, I hope that when this ceremony closes and when the flame lights, the world will be overwhelmed by positive feelings of getting together. You know, of bringing down a little bit all this protections and these panoplies that we have been wearing for a number of years during the years of the pandemic, and which many parts of the world increasingly wear because of what's happening around the world right now. So I hope that this ceremony and this incredible effort that France and Paris are doing will really touch the hearts of billions of people around the world, that people will feel differently. Will open their hands to people next to them, people that they don't even know, even if it is for a few moments. I think that this can make a difference in the world.
Thanks for listening to the Broadcast Sport podcast. You can find more of our content at broadcastnow.co.uk/broadcast-sport. Meanwhile, make sure to subscribe and we'll see you for the next one.